Welcome to episode 29 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the latest must-see theatre online. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone and where to find the best theatrical entertainment during the lockdown. We'll be bringing you the latest developments and press announcements in the world of theatre in these unprecedented times. So a little bit of background on me. I acted professionally after graduating from Warwick University and Drama School, and I've been teaching drama, head of arts faculty and director of drama in four very different secondary school settings for the last 18 years. I'm keen for the creative process of Theatre Audience Podcast to be quite organic and interactive in light of theatres sadly remaining closed for the foreseeable future. So join me on Instagram, live at 5, every Thursday, where I chat about the week's theatrical events with my friend who's also a producer called Darren Murphy. I've recently set up the Theatre Audience Podcast YouTube channel where you can watch recordings of each Live at 5 in full. Feel free to contact me and discuss all things theatrical on Facebook and Twitter. So this is my Theatre in Quarantine series of podcasts, and during the lockdown, every day I'm discovering new theatrical morsels online. So in this episode, I'm going to keep you informed of my finds and let you know what's coming up. So here's Darren Murphy and I chatting on Instagram Live at 5 last week about all things stagey. And for our full conversation, you can go to IGTV or you can go to my YouTube channel and subscribe. There you can also find my interview with Maddie Bullamant, who plays Anne of Cleves in Six the Musical.
Did you see the bridge version? You'd seen it live, hadn't you? With me, yeah.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I think it was filmed really well. I mean, at the end of the day, that was only last summer. And they were filming it for National Theatre Live, so like Fleabag, that, you know, they had the agenda, they knew what they were doing, the idea was it was going to go out in cinemas anyway, so they filmed it, you know, multi-angle. It was great, actually. You got the best view of every bit, and in many ways, you know, when you were doing the promenade experience, you might have got the best bit, the best view of that particular bed, but then when the other bed came up and it moved over there, you might not have done so.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it was really, really good. I suppose it's just like watching a concert that you went to see, and there's bits that you would have missed sort of close up because you're standing watching it live and a bit on the screen and things like that. So I think they did a really good job of that, and you know,
they captured the best moments, basically.
I think so. And actually, because I know they filmed it all on the one evening, every single actor was absolutely firing on all. Just as I thought when I saw it live, I thought the direction, was it Nicholas Heitner? He's done so much recently.
Yeah, but he runs the theatre, so why wouldn't he?
No, but just no. There was something. What did I watch the other day on telly? And he produced it, I think. I'm not sure. I know what I have seen recently. But this is TV now, is Alan Bennett, yeah. Talking Heads. I think there's five.
I've seen the originals.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think there's five. Yeah, so the original would have been Patricia Routledge, and it was the pen lady, the lady who wrote all the letters, and then ended up by, oh, spoiler alert, because it's a bit of a twist. But people had probably read it and seen it and anything anyway. But who was it? Imelda Staunton. She was great. That was really good. And actually, you know, if exam boards are going to start releasing things saying that we need to be doing more monologue based work so that it's focusing on the individual, and if they've not been able to rehearse with their scene partners because they're isolating for 2 weeks and yada yada yada, and we're going down a bit of a monologue route, at least, you know, when they come to do auditions in 4 or 5 years time, they're going to be super great at that and very confident.
Very well, yeah.
Not be able to interact with other humans, but they'll be really good like this.
But you say that, but what's interesting is it almost mirrors life, because I find that the youth, pretty much, they live on their phones, they find it hard to interact with each other in real life.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yes, that was then. That was then. This is now, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Although they do interact quite a lot with their friends on, you know, like gaming devices and stuff, so they're not completely...
But it's not in person.
It's not
still
reading.
Via device.
Yeah, they're not reading facial expressions and posture and, you know, emotions.
Being in the moment, being true to the moment, yeah. Responding to what you're given, all this kind of stuff, yeah, which is so important. And as actors, you know, I when I do auditions, I rarely do the preliminary call. Mm. I do the recalls because I get so frustrated with some actors where they're not prepared. And it's always just another audition, you know. I don't care about that. I don't care that you know what your thing. You're in the space with me. I want it to be the most important job of your life. Otherwise, don't come. You know, it's, and that's sometimes just like,
yeah.
And they never do monologues for me. There's no point. They could be a master of monologues, but it'd be useless. Yeah. Engaging with someone else.
Well, they've got, it's the chemistry read, isn't it? That's so important.
Which is the recalls usually, yeah. But even the initial reads, always reading with a reader.
Mm.
It's never stood there. You know, they might, if it's a musical, say they do a song, of course, that's fine. But other than that, then no. And that's only really to hear what their range is and their voice. And also if they can take notes on a song that they already know.
Yeah.
Which is really
and
important.
And not be thrown. Yeah, that's super important. That's it though, really. I'm, you know, going to watch Much Ado About Nothing on Sunday because I spoke to the actor playing Benedict, and that's it really. National Theatre have got something on ce soir at 7 p.m. Blanc, I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, Blanc, the white. Yeah, white,
yeah.
Blanc.
Yeah. Yeah, so that'll Blanc, be interesting. Yeah. And I do still need to watch The Grinning Man, which I never got round to, actually. We talked about that last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Bristol Old Vic. Or Old Vic.
Yeah, that's
Old
not
Vic.
A good production, though. That's a shame, actually, because The Grinning Man, West End, they rewrote the second act.
Mm.
So what you can see in the Bristol Old Vic version is an old version which actually doesn't work.
Right.
Which is a bit of a shame.
Yeah.
But that's just the way it is, so...
Yeah. Oh, well... And and then what did you say it was called, the one at the National tonight?
Blanc White.
Yeah, that is an archive version. So, and we've talked before, haven't we, about like, you know, obviously I love Barbershop, but when I went to watch it and it was archive, I was like, oh, it wasn't filmed in the same way as The Bridge, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah.
So that's it.
And now onto the main reviews. In this episode, I chat with actor Edward Bennett, whose recent productions include Breaking the Code, where he played Alan Turing at the Salisbury Playhouse, The Rehearsal and Hay Fever at the Chichester Festival Theatre, Plenty at the Sheffield Crucible, and Rodrigo in Othello at the Donmar Warehouse. At the Theatre Royal Bath, he performed in Things We Do for Love, In the Next Room, and School for Scandal. Here, he was also directed by Sir Peter Hall in Little Nell, Measure for Measure, Habeas Corpus, and Pygmalion. You may have recently seen him playing Stanley Stubbers in One Man, Two Governors, directed by Nicholas Heitner at the National Theatre, which was recently streamed live. And furthermore, his most memorable performance for me was in one of my top five favourite ever pieces of theatre, where he played Billy in Love Song at the Lyric Hammersmith, and this was directed by Scott Graham and Stephen Hogarth with Frantic Assembly. His TV work includes Poldark, Miranda, Victoria, and Silent Witness, to name but a few. And he's performed numerous times for the Royal Shakespeare Company, notably as Macduff in Macbeth, Love's Labour's Lost, A Midsummer Night's Dream, Laertes in Hamlet, and on Sunday, his performance as Benedick in Much Ado About Nothing will be live streamed by the BBC as part of their Culture in Quarantine series. Here's our interview.
So, hi Ed, how are you?
Hello, very well, thank you very much. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How's the lockdown treating you?
It's like a very mild form of despair, isn't it? Which grows into a panic, occasionally into a kind of euphoric state of calm. But mostly... I've got she's 3-and-a-month-year-old daughter, so, oh. You know, essentially I've been in lockdown for 3 years anyway, so I haven't noticed To be honest, I've started gardening. I've laid turf. I've trimmed hedges. I'm growing radishes.
Wow.
And spinach and broad beans.
Nice.
Saying that makes me hate myself, but at the same time, I get a certain amount of pleasure out of that. I'm quite fit now, or fitter when I say that, like comparative to being a drinker and a smoker in the past. So, as in, I can go for a bike ride now without endangering my life, which is nice. Speaking to family more than is healthy, which I think is a lot of people are doing with lockdown, aren't they? They're kind of feel like they need to talk to people more than they actually would want to or need to. And yeah, just kind of trying to stay in the moment as everyone is, and I'm just taking everything day to day, and try not to worry too much and try and be grateful, etc., etc., you know.
Yeah, good. Yeah. So keeping busy and new skills for the CV.
Yes.
Gardening.
Yeah, that's what my stepdad says. He kind of, oh, you can put that on the CV. But I've lied on my CV all my life anyway.
You've now got to achieve all the things that are on there.
I think most lied to an extent on their CV though, haven't they? I mean, what did I have on mine? Farmyard machinery, highly skilled, gymnastics, highly skilled, Portuguese, highly skilled. And I actually got picked up on it, the Portuguese one, in an audition at the Garrick Theatre. Can't remember the casting director. She started speaking Portuguese, I think. Just going through the spotlight for her. Just going, oh, this is interesting. He's highly skilled in Portuguese. Started speaking Portuguese. I obviously didn't understand it. And then she was so angry, she frog marched me over to the Equity and made me take it off after the audition. But you know, at drama school, you sat there with your spotlight for me. You've got all these options.
Yeah.
And so you just kind of, you just get ticking, then you just tick, tick.
Juggling, tightrope walker, roller skater.
It's all that.
Horse rider, that could pull you up, couldn't it?
Oh, I can actually. I've been a horse rider since I was three. I know how to, I'm a good horse rider, and it gets my goat. There's a lot of actors, all actors put it on. And quite rightly, because if you get a job, you just learn how to do it quickly, and most of the time they teach you anyway. But my mate got a job presenting a horse riding program, having only ever been on like a couple of pony tracks, and he turned up for the first day and they basically had a full show jumping course, a 3-foot, 6-4-foot show jumping course. And I said, right, so you'll do the course and then you'll stop in front of the camera and say, welcome to Right Star. And yeah, he got sacked within a couple of hours.
Oh my goodness.
That was it.
Oh dear. So obviously, I mean, you've got a very extensive acting CV, which we'll go into in more depth later. But this Sunday, we've got Much Ado About Nothing, which is being live streamed by the BBC as part of their Culture in Quarantine series. And you were in that production as Benedict. So how did you get involved in that show? I know you've done quite a lot with the RSC.
In that show specifically, you know, it was an audition and then a recall. And then got the job. It was kind of that simple. It wasn't a kind of, I think it offered it or anything like that, which is great. Everybody in that show auditioned, which I think is, personally, I just think is important.
Yeah.
That everyone got it as a result of an audition, so that there is, especially on a long job like that and a large cast, it does, I think it helps that sense of ensemble to an extent, you know. You know, I grew up near Stratford, so it was always, you know, my dream to work there, and I, you know, wanted to, and I've been lucky enough to work there a couple of times and love the place. I still kind of love it.
Yeah.
As much as I did when I first went there, which is great, you know. Yeah. And changed a lot, and it's obviously every theatre is having challenges at the moment. I think the RSC, even before lockdown, has had many challenges and kind of epochs of time that has had definitions attached to it. But I love it, and I absolutely love that production. I think it's kind of a special one for me. I think everybody in it felt it was quite special, and audiences really loved it. So I'm pleased that it's on. I didn't actually know it was on. I knew the Beth that I was in was on, And I knew this one was on, but I thought it might may have already been on or whatever. But so I'm pleased it's going out live, is it?
Yeah, it's going out live on Sunday. I'm looking forward to it because I obviously didn't see this production, but I love the RST. I went to Warwick University, so I spent quite a lot of time sort of being a Shakespeare geek and in Shakespeare's birthplace, doing some research and.
Oh, this makes you feel more intelligent being in there, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like the private library, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like I could have read, a book in the library at my university, but no.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting there was very important.
But you can sometimes see actors in there, seeing if they can glean something kind of
new
and academic, which they can go into rehearsal and impress their director with the next morning.
Yeah. And that particular production, was that in rep with a couple of other shows?
It was in rep with Love's Labour's Lost.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame they're not showing that because the two shows were very much a pair.
Right.
In the concept of them, one, Love's Labour's Lost was set in 1914, the kind of last glorious summer before the First World War, and then Much Ado was set in 1918 with the soldiers coming back from
the
First World War. So it was a real link between them. I think it would have been quite, a brave but a good decision for the BBC to show them both together. But Love's Labour's Lost isn't as popular a play. Mm. People don't know it as much.
Was it?
And, all of the...
Mm. Even more reason to show it, though, you'd think, to educate.
Because it's so... linked. They're completely separate plays, but what Chris Luscombe did with them and Simon Higlett, the designer, did with them was to really create this sense of a kind of duologue between the two shows in many respects. I mean, they're completely different plays, but the beginnings and ends of them tie in really beautifully, and you get an understanding of why the beginnings and the ends of the plays are how they are by seeing both of them. But anyway, Much Ado is such an iconic play. I can understand why they did that. It was wonderful.
Mm. So tell me about the role of Benedict. How do you prepare for a role like that?
I prepare in quite a relaxed way, I suppose. I love, once you know you've got a part, and especially a part like that, you just read the play a lot and start to imagine how you feel about it, simple as that. And then with the RST especially, you're very lucky to have quite a long rehearsal process, so I like to leave most of it in rehearsal. I like to be very familiar with the lines, but I don't want to have made any decisions, because for me the most thing, and especially with Shakespeare, the most important thing to do is to create relationships with the other actors and characters, so that the audience don't have to worry about believing you. They can believe you, and they can spend the rest of the time to try and figure out what the hell you're talking about, because it's Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's really talked about enough within Shakespeare, especially, that the space between characters and actors and character, and how you access your character through other characters, how important that is. Because when I go to the theatre, if I don't believe the relationships between people, really believe how important they are, I just switch off immediately. So, for me, rehearsal is everything, and also it can make so much more sense of the text, so much more sense of the play that you're doing, if you can spend your time in rehearsal really connecting with other people and connecting to what they're about and what their energies are and everything. And so, I just get excited about it before day one, and then I trust the process of being in a rehearsal room and making that the most important thing about it. That's just me. Some actors will kind of have it all ready to go day one, and then be able to be flexible and be open. But I try and stay pretty blank canvas until we get going.
Mm.
Similarities: arrogance, egocentricity, oversensitivity, sense of humour. I think a kind of pride, a love of his friends, and. I think that's it, really. I mean, I felt very close to him, I think, because really, I think with him and Barone, who I played in Los Labor's Lost, it feels like they are slight reflections of what Shakespeare thought about love. You know, he wrote Los Labor's young man, and Barone is extraordinarily idealistic, unbelievably poetic and flighty in his thoughts, and Benedict is much more realistic, much more jaded about love and life and women and relationships, but isn't without salvation, you know. And I think what's lovely is it's a play about the salvation of people who thought that they couldn't have love again, and they can. It's lovely.
And what would you say is your favourite moment or line from the play?
From that play?
For Benedict.
I'm really bad at remembering lines. I'm so sorry, I'm just really bad at it. I think there's... the end of the play, there's... I can't remember what he says.
A specific moment or feeling, maybe? Or
interaction. There's a feeling at the end when you know, Benedict and Beatrice have both been tricked and their letters have both been, and he realises, I think, not only how he feels about Beatrice, which he's already kind of figured out that like publicly he can say it to everyone in the room, but also how everyone in that room has had a part to play in bringing him and them to their senses so that they can be together, and how wonderful that is. And I very often was quite emotional at the end of the play in that moment, because you look around at all of these faces and these friends who are your very, very best friends, a very special kind of experience that you've all shared, and they're all looking at you, and they're all doing their job, and they're all happy to be there. I think most people were happy to be there, and I found that very touching and very kind of symbiotic, you know. You know, Benedict needs his friends, and Edward needed them too. We all need each other. It was a really nice moment. That it was always, and it was always there. And then we sang a little song afterwards, which was quite nice.
And I guess that's a feel that you get when you're working at the RST, because it's quite intensive, and as you say, a nice long rehearsal process, and you're rehearsing as an ensemble two productions sort of simultaneously.
Yeah, there was a third one as well. There was Christmas Truce, which a proportion of the company were in as well, and that was rehearsing. I think once we opened one of the shows, that was rehearsing as well. So a lot of people, I was only in two shows, but most were in three, and it was hard work, you know, for a lot of people.
So rehearsing during the day and then show at night.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, the previous thing I just did at the RSC, just did, finished like a year and a half ago. Time's gone weird, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. Lockdown.
Yeah. No idea what day of the week it is.
He was very early on in lockdown. Stephen Fry did an interview about one of the most important things to do for your mental health is change your approach to time. And only someone as clever as Stephen Fry can actually back you what that means. But I get an inkling of what it means. Anyway.
Stephen Fry, the Time Lord.
I guess so. Some people over a 10-month job only had about a month, 6 weeks, where they were just doing shows. If they weren't rehearsing a play, they were doing understudy rehearsals as well. And that went on and on and on and on. So there were for a lot of people, they were working day and night, 5-6 days a week for 9 months, 8 months. Wow. So it's quite hardcore. But I think that's good.
It's busy.
The big thing about the RSC is it sorts the wheat from the chaff a bit.
Yeah.
Because you... people who can do that, and especially people who can be good and committed, and with not massive parts, but with good parts, and can do all of that, and still stay positive and not become embittered and angry.
Yeah,
are kind of professionals that you want to work with again and again, and do and elevate and you know, and give better opportunities to.
Yeah.
It's tough for a lot of people, I think, especially being in Stratford, you know. the mystique of the RSC can or any theatre can dwindle quite quickly when you get there and you realise that, oh, it's just, you know, it's just the play, these are just my parts and everything like that. And so you have to be quite aware of yourself when you get to Stratford for the first time. That's why I always felt lucky having grew up there, because I kind of knew the area a bit and could kind of go see family, go see other friends from school and stuff like that. So it was always kind of great for me.
Like coming home.
Very much so. I miss it. So I'm going up there in a few weeks, actually. I'm doing a project with some of the actors in the current company.
Oh, right. Do you know Johnny Broadbent?
Yeah, he's going to do it.
Because I was due to go on bank holiday weekend to watch him in Comedy of Errors. But obviously, all of this happened. He's a good friend of mine, so...
Is he?
Yeah.
I chat with him yesterday, actually.
He did the podcast on Henry the Sixth, and
did he?
Right. Yeah, so
he is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that Twelfth Night he did?
That was quite a while back, wasn't it?
It was ages.
Yeah, it was a long, long time ago. And he's been in to do workshops with my students and things over the years. It? Yeah, he did a lot of stuff with Filter Theatre. So yeah, his Oberon in his you know, all in one jumpsuit and stuff. Sort of like a superhero and things like that. So yeah, quite.
I think he has this extraordinary ability to be both extraordinarily good at the part he's playing and also give a slight indication that he's taking the piss out of it at the same time.
Yes.
Which always makes it entertaining. It's almost like he's winging it.
And works.
Always works.
It keeps you, as an audience member, kind of on the edge of your seat in that kind of moment of totally engaged.
I love him. So we're gonna do some work together on some monologues.
Oh, good.
Based around the idea of rhetoric.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
Because everyone thinks rhetoric is just for kind of Oxbridge students, or if you've been to Eton or Harrow or something. But it's right at the centre of Shakespeare, and if you can understand it a bit, it can unlock a hell of a lot about what he's saying and why he's saying it. And of course, it was all he was educated in himself. So, you know, I think it's really important that people who do Shakespeare understand rhetoric.
Yeah.
Because I think it could really help make Shakespeare better, more, because it's, you know, it's quite rare to see a good one, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be that rare. It's kind of, people go, if you've seen about 30 Shakespeare plays, usually about 3 of them are good, really good.
Yeah, you do. I do go through phases of like, I don't think I can watch another, whatever, Hamlet or something like that. But now we hear that Ian McKellen's going to be playing Hamlet.
Yeah, he'll be doing that, Nate.
Age blind casting now, so that's interesting. Look forward to seeing that in time.
I think the way the casting will get to a point where there won't actually be anyone there. It'll be so neutral. There won't actually be an actor there. There'll just be a script with a light on it.
And a microphone. And it'll be socially distanced.
People standing around looking at it, thinking the play.
We're just going to absorb it. We're going to absorb it. It'll just be through podcast. I mean, I've just literally, I couldn't do my school summer production. So I've literally got 40, 50 kids to rehearse different lines and send them to me on voice memo. And I've pulled the whole thing together with bits of narration, whole of A Midsummer Night's Dream. Because obviously this week has been all about the Bridge Theatre's Midsummer Night's Dream, which was a very good interpretation, I felt. Just give me a quick whistle-stop tour through your resume, please.
Okay.
I'm going to time it. I'm going to give you exactly a minute, starting from now. Go.
Started off in regional theatre. Did the Theatre Clwyd, Salisbury, Bristol, York. Then did some tours. Worked with Peter Hall, which was amazing. Got some amazing parts at the Orange Tree alongside doing Peter Hall Company, which was a really big deal for me. Then I got my first kind of London break in Othello at the Donmar with Mark Grandage, Ewan McGregor, and Chiwetel, so that made me look cool. Then
Chiwetel Ejiofor?
Yeah.
We did National Youth Theatre and Dulwich Youth Theatre together. He's an old friend from years ago. Amazing.
This isn't part of my minute, by the way, if you interject.
No, no, sorry. Keep going. Sorry. I'll add 10 seconds on.
Thanks. Ben did RSC and understudied Hamlet. Had to go on for a month. Big deal. Wow. Got in the papers. And it didn't work for ages because no one knew what to do with me. Went back into regional theatre for a bit, then started doing a bit of telly, did some more stuff at the RSC, did some more stuff in theatre, and basically just came in jobbing, just about making a living, jobbing. Started doing more and more telly over the last year, about two, three years. Had a child, which is why I need to do more telly, because she needs to eat. and that's about it.
That's good. Yeah, that was a minute. If the interjection I had to take out, and then I lost track of the maths. So
I've got a very, very good sense of time. Usually.
Yeah, no, that was really good. Well, that's important, isn't it? Because you've got to come on for the right cues and.
Well, no, I'm crap at that. When I did One Man Two Governors, and one show, I came on early three times, like half a season. And that show is all about coming in at the right time. And I completely screwed up. Luckily, Rufus Hand was in it, and he just made a joke of it. And we ended up having a row, like a fake fun row on stage about it. yeah, sorry, go on.
No, so I don't know whether you mentioned it then, but you were in Love Song, which is one of my all-time favourite, in my top five pieces of theatre ever. Yeah, I do love Frantic Assembly. But Love Song, I don't know, something, just a really emotional piece. Saw it twice, funnily enough, once from down in the stalls, so it was like properly all about the emotion, then another time up from the dress circle to look more at the movement side of things. But a really, really powerful piece, and one that I revisit with students.
That's
the lyric
announcement.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, I never thought I'd be able to do something like that. You know, I'm very middle class, very, very, you know, movement, dancing, never did that, never, always enjoyed it, but it was never something I thought would be part of something anyone would want to see me do. But the great thing about Frantic, which is why they are so good in education, is
absolutely. But
it really is for everyone. I don't think all theatre should be for everyone. I think the word elitism is a very dirty word at the moment, but it shouldn't be. Some things should be for the very, very best people, and they should want to be the best in order to do it. And I think it's very easy for people to blame other things, but that's another matter. But with Frantic, it's an extraordinary process that they have evolved very carefully and very thoroughly. Over many, many years, these two guys, well, now I know it's just Scott, but they're very, very, very nice guys, and they helped me and everyone in that company. But I was very much the novice when it came to movement and dancing and lifting and stuff like that. Everyone else, I mean, Sean Phillips is a beast. She can out-press up anyone. Yeah, like, does Pilates and yoga, and Sam was amazing too. Leanne was Leanne was a trained dancer as well, so it really helped me because a lot of stuff I did was with her. But the play, you know, as Abby Morgan wrote it, about, you know, after losing her dad, love and loss. It was a beautifully balanced play that love and loss and a bit of humour. It was delicate, sensitive, and we dealt with it very well. And having Abby in the room with us, changing things through rehearsal, you know, bold script as we went through our ideas, because what's amazing about movement is that you don't realise it, but it's giving you ideas about the play by doing the movement, whereas usually you're just kind of going, right, what choices can I make, instead of the choices actually come to you, which is an amazing feeling. You feel much more in control of the process when you're doing
that. What's it like working with the author in the room? You know, because obviously with Much Ado, Shakespeare, not there.
Yeah, not near.
His aura and spirit in Stratford, but
although some directors feel that Shakespeare really is talking through them.
Absolutely. But, I felt that during my Midsummer Night's Dream podcast. He was just there with me in the room, omnipresent, you know.
Having her there was great. I mean, she wasn't there too much. It wasn't like having someone watching you, judging it. But she would come in and we'd simply do like an hour or two chatting about where we were at, and she'd watch a little bit, and then she'd go away and go, well, that needs another little scene in there, doesn't it? Or that can I can take that out. And luckily, we did all that early. We didn't have to take out chunks that we'd been working on for 4 weeks and lots of muscle for and everything. It was done, structured very well. Four of us in it, and we all work really hard. It's the hardest I've worked comprehensively, you know, physically and every other way. Emotionally as well, really
draining.
Really draining. And the bed routine.
Oh God, that was amazing. I do remember, that's why I went back to watch it, because I had sixth formers and some were sat in the stalls, some were sat up, and I was in the store. We all came out weeping. We were like emotionally drained, and they were like, oh, did you see the way they went into the bed? We were like, we couldn't see that. We were front row of the stall. So then I went to see it again to get that duality. Yeah.
Yeah. That took a lot of time, and underneath that bed, we're essentially having a very mild foursome in order to get to where we needed to get to get in. But it was great. I loved it. I spoke to Scott recently, actually. I did an interview for him early on in lockdown. We were reminiscing very, very positively about that. Especially about Sian. She's just extraordinary. She's done loads of stuff for them since.
Yeah.
She's another for them after that. But I think that resonated. And extraordinary, isn't it? That a playlist about an old person.
Yeah.
Dealing with illness and death was something that young people connected with.
Well, I think that was the thing, having that sort of the two generations. I think it meant that, you know, but then I think with Frantic, the plays that they pick tend to be, you know, about different people, different generations, and no matter what the demographic is in that audience, you know, so like Things I Know to Be True, or I Think We Are Alone, you know, everyone picks up on a different character or identifies with a different person or theme or issue. And it's very clever because it deals with humans and life and, powerful stuff. And then, you know, last thing then, what advice would you give to young people who are hoping to enter the profession? I mean, obviously it's all a bit odd at the moment. Drama schools finishing and auditions not quite going ahead. But what advice would you give to young people going into the profession?
Go and see as much as possible. Good and bad. Just go all the time. I didn't go enough. And I think I would have a much better understanding of certain elements of theatre, especially new theatre, new writing, if I'd gone to see more stuff at the Royal Court, if I'd gone to see more stuff perhaps at the Almeida. I wanted to go and see, because I thought that's where the best acting was, and sometimes it is. I wanted to go and see the Chekhovs, and I wanted to go and see the Shaws, and stuff like that. And I think the industry is moving very, very quickly at the moment, culturally and professionally, regardless of lockdown. It's a very quick moving place, and I think actors now, from an earlier age possibly, need to have a greater understanding of who they are as a person and as a performer in order to put themselves into this profession. Because I don't think it's quite so much about being an actor, being able to do anything, being able to be a chameleon. It's about who you are. What's your identity? What's your online identity? What's your image? I think image is a much bigger deal than it used to be when I started out. I might be talking rubbish, I don't know, but I think finding your taste is quite important at the moment, because you can have perhaps a bit more control over where you want to put yourself when you get out of drama school, if you go to drama school. Also, you know, do it. Even now, you know, I've had like 2-3 months off. It's been great to be at home, turfing, gardening. But I got to the point where I had to do something. So I just talked to friends, and we're setting up this thing about rhetoric at the RSC, hopefully. because we want to do something. And the fear, one of the fears, there's a lot of sadness and fear and worry, depression at the moment, and anger as well. It's the fear of losing your talent or forgetting your talent. If you're not, if you don't have an audience, if you don't have people to reflect off and work with, because it's not, I don't know, as a musician, I think you can always say you're a musician because you're always practicing. You can always grab your trumpet and practice. Or an artist, paint, actor needs, you need
an audience.
Someone, you need a feeling. This is something else that we can't really have very much at the moment. So now that we can, to an extent, meet and do things and read things and perform things, just do it as much as you possibly can.
Excellent. Oh, well, thank you for chatting to me today. It's been lovely to get some insight into work at the RSC, and good luck with the future.
Thanks.
And yeah, I look forward to finding out what you and Johnny and the others get up to with this rhetoric project.
I'm sure he'll be letting you know before too long.
Absolutely.
Maybe the podcast about it.
Well, absolutely. I'd love to, because anything I can, you know, take back to the podcast, or, you know, through
my
educational friends, is all very useful. You know, anything I can take
to
the students.
I'll be in touch with you about that. That's
yeah,
really good
no, definitely. Definitely.
Okay. Thank
we'll
you.
We'll champion Shakespeare, all of us together.
Let's do it.
All right, then. Take care. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
So a huge thank you to Edward Bennett and to everyone at the Royal Shakespeare Company Press Office. And now for my finale and curtain call. In recent episodes, I chatted to Mark Goldthorpe recently in Mary Poppins, Gareth Snook in Wise Children, and Mark Holden from Pretty Woman the Musical. We're all missing theatre, and if you want to reminisce previous productions that you may have seen, or find out more about productions that you might not have got the chance to see, then why not listen to episodes 1 to 20 of Theatre Audience Podcast. In these, you can find discussions on West End musicals such as Hamilton, currently showing on Disney, and Juliet, Mamma Mia, Come From Away, Les Miserables, and Dear Evan Hansen, and plays such as Death of a Salesman, Fleabag, and Uncle Vanya. For most of these productions, I went backstage and interviewed actors and actresses, including Alice Fern, Patterson Joseph, Nari and Aaron Blair-Mangat, Rachel Tucker, and Lauren Ward. And in light of Broadway being closed until at least January 2021, there's even a Broadway episode where I visit Chicago, Moulin Rouge, Lin-Manuel Miranda's Freestyle Love Supreme, and I go backstage at Beetlejuice and stand on the Winter Garden stage and chat to the head of props, Austin Rodriguez. So plenty to keep you entertained over the coming weeks. In educational episode 23 to 24, Trap Teaching The Tempest, I'm joined by several actors from West End, the RSC and the National Theatre who recorded monologues and duologues from Shakespeare's play and then provide me with commentaries on how an actor prepares. This links to the GCSE and A-level specifications and supplemented my online drama teaching. Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Spotify, Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. And do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, then please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.